The following program is brought to you by Total Theater Online. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the staff or management of WGBB. You're listening to the station that serves your community, 1240 WGBB. And now it's time for Dave's Gone By with David Lefkowitz.
There goes the neighborhood. Welcome to another edition of Dave's Gone By. 90 minutes of music, comedy, talk radio, and more. Brought to you every week by Total Theater with help from our sponsors, the Tondra Grill and Hewlett Minuteman Press. Happy spring, everybody. I could have said that last week, but it didn't feel like spring. It was 25 degrees out with the threat of more snow hanging in the air. So I didn't want to give God the satisfaction of calling that blustery midwinter day spring, which is too confusing. But that sure seems very long ago. I mean, we were topping near 70 degrees this weekend, and you got the damp, rainy weather, the crocuses coming up, people starting to renovate their houses and fix their cars. Spring is here for sure. And with spring, like pants pockets, comes change. Old man winter kind of stymied everybody. People get set in their ways. Even if they're doing the same exact thing that they would have been doing in the high heat of the summer, working in an office, bringing the kids to school, planning a dinner party. Everything still feels stuck in amber when the winter hits. Time passes the same way, but the freshness of autumn has shriveled up, and the urgency of spring isn't even conceivable when there's a foot of snow on the ground. Winter is like that moment on a long airplane trip when you look at the mileage meter that they have on the TV screens now, and you see that you're only one-third of the way there, passing over the ocean 30,000 feet into the clouds, and you know you've got 7 more hours before landing, and nothing's happening. You can stretch, listen to music, read a book, go to the bathroom, but basically you're looking at 6.5 hours of hang time with nowhere to go and nothing really worthwhile to do. That's winter, especially this last winter with the December and January from hell. I know hell is supposed to be hot, and when you have a couple of 100-degree days in July, you start to believe it. But hell could just as easily be frigid and icy. Many evil people die, and instead of getting whipped and scalded and tormented by demons, they're simply brought to a giant shopping mall in the middle of January, and they're forced to walk from one side of the parking lot to the other, without getting hit by cars or breaking their hips. And if they do that 50 times in a row, maybe then they can move out of hell and up one notch to limbo, which is what? Being a wrinkle on the face of a Hollywood superstar. You get the glamour and the glory, but just when you start to enjoy it, a surgeon sticks a needle in you and you disappear forever. Kind of the good and the bad, the yin and the yang on that one. And limbo is also an appropriate term for this radio show at the moment, and I will explain why. And it's nothing bad. We're not going off the air. But, because, as I mentioned, we've reached spring in full swing, WGBB is revamping its schedule. And we're not talking about turmoil like there was last summer with a whole management change and the studio physically moving from Nassau County all the way out to Babylon. Now, this is standard stuff. Most radio stations do a spring and fall overhaul, and a station as eclectic as WGBB especially has a lot of flip-flopping and people returning from a winter break and leaving over the summer or just doing a few weeks at a time and then coming back the following year. It keeps things interesting, but also, unfortunately, a bit unbalanced and topsy-turvy. And the reason I bring all this up is that at the last schedule rethink more than half a year ago, Dave's Gone By moved from Sunday evenings to Mondays, the time slot we have now. And it's been a great slot. Full 90 minutes, not quite prime time, but half in drive time and half during dinner time. And it's weeknights, so lots of people are home or commuting home, and early enough in the evening so that I could come to the station on the mid-afternoon on Mondays and have the studio to myself to do pre-production and editing. And if you've been listening the half hour before my show to WGBB Tonight, hosted at 6 by engineer Joe Salzone, you'll know that he often has me on there to kibitz and talk about my show or goof on politics or things in the news. It's a great warm-up, you know, a way to ease into days gone by. But, as I said, spring has sprung, and the station is suddenly confronted with a dozen DJs saying, I want this, or I want that, or I'm only able to do this, or you promised me last season that if I came back, I could do that, etc. So, much as I have really loved doing this program on early Monday nights, that is going to change, at least for the time being. Starting in 2 weeks, Days Gone By is going to move to a new day and time slot. It's not 100% sure what time and when. We are still narrowing that down among three or four choices. One of them is prime time, so I am keeping my fingers crossed, or whatever Jews do with their fingers when they're hoping for something. Prime time would be really cool, because more people would be home and therefore able to listen by computer if their radios are out of signal range. Another option is late night. Not too late. More like evening news or Leno late, which might cost the show some older audience members and maybe parents of their young kids. But at the same time, pretty much everyone would be home, and I wouldn't have to look behind my back as much as far as content, especially in this age of FCC fascism. So that is very tempting. I mean, we're always careful to say at or near the beginning of the program that Dave's Gone By is rated DGB-13. Probably not appropriate for children under 13, although most of it really is. Some of it is not appropriate for anybody. But I'm not going to decide that for you. Neither is the station, and neither should Congress or the FCC. So I just say, caveat listener, not everything in the program is suitable for all audiences all the time. But if you're grown-ups, you can make the call, or at least hustle your children out of the room if I start to talk about penises or excrement or vulvas or war atrocities, not necessarily in that order. Hey, did you get your kids out of the room in time, huh? Well, listen closer next time! But anyway, when Days Gone By first started back in October 2002, it was a late-night show, 11 o'clock to midnight on Sunday nights. And obviously that was a low-profile slot. You don't see WFAN putting Imus on just when everyone's hitting the hay to start the new work week. But on the plus side, being somewhat under the radar took the pressure off my having a brand new show with an untested format. I knew what I was doing, or at least what I wanted to do, but I was wet behind the ears and a bit easily thrown by anything that went awry. 71 programs later, I still get nervous. I still worry that a bit is going to crash or a rant is going to bore people, but I'm not climbing the walls over it. I do what I do, and I'm confident, and I'm proud, and I'm having a great time, and I must be doing it somewhat well because I've got listeners and sponsors and fans and a little cottage industry almost. It's very exciting. And in the year and a half I've been on the air at GBB, I have already changed time slots about four times, from 11 to midnight on Sundays, to 8 to 9 on Sundays, to 7:30 to 9, and then the Monday move that I've had since early fall. And I thank all of you for making that move with me and enjoying the show, I hope, and telling your friends, emailing me your thoughts, increasing the profile of Days Gone By, and I am sure you will stay with me as we go through this next change starting in April. So again, the news is that Days Gone By will be changing time slots in 2 weeks. Next week we're not on at all because it's Passover, the first Seder night, so they'll either play a repeat episode or they'll already bring a new Monday program into this slot starting April 5th. But the week of April 12th, now I couldn't tell you which day, I could not tell you which time, but it's the second week of April. Look for Dave's Gone By, because we will be back every week, all spring and summer long. And how do you find out when and where? Besides twirling the radio dial randomly and hoping you'll hear my dulcet nasality wheezing in your woofers and teasing your tweeters? A couple of ways, actually. The best is to get on the mailing list for Dave's Gone By, the e-mailing list. Send your email address to davesgoneby@aol.com, and we will put you on the list for the show's weekly email release. It's short, it's funny, there are no attachments, nothing to download, no viruses. and everyone is blind CC'd. So your email address is kept private, even from the other people receiving the same email. And your name is not given to organizations or put on any ad lists or sold to any web companies. It's just an absolutely private list maintained by my staff, who send out an email once a week that tells what's going to be on the next show and why you should listen. Of course, it also tells when and where the next episode will be on. So if you haven't already, please get on the mailing list. All it takes is half a minute. Email me your name. You don't even have to give me your name. Just email me your email address and a note that says, Dave, please put me on your list. Or if not your list, certainly your Chopin. Click send, and you will be added to the growing list of lucky people in the Daverhood. Dave's gone by at AOL.com. And there's no apostrophe in that, just D-A-V-E-S, gone by at AOL.com. And another way to check is by going to my website, hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By. hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By. It's updated at least two or three times a week. And as soon as I know what the new time slot of this program will be, and I should know that by the end of this week, I will put it up on the homepage, hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By. You can also check the radio station's website, am1240wgbb.com, and click on their schedule page, although that can sometimes go a couple of weeks before being brought fully up to date. And if you don't have a computer, amazing as it sounds, I personally know two or three folks who listen to this program regularly and have not bitten the apple. They have not opened the pearly Bill Gates. That's cool, too. You can always write to me. Dave's Gone By, P.O. Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062. That's Dave's Gone By, Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062. I will send you back a letter with all the information, and if you are really nice in your request, I might just lick more than the stamp. I don't even know what that means, but write to me, email me, call me if you want, 516-295-1511, area code 516-295-1511. Whatever you do, don't panic. Dave's Gone By isn't going away. It's taking a week's vacation for Passover, and when we come back, second week of April, we will be in a spanking new time slot. All the better to entertain you with. Oh, and as long as we're taking care of all this business, I usually don't like to throw so much informational, expositional claptrap at you so early in the show. I like to save it for the more claptrap-friendly segments in the second half of the program. But since I won't see you next week, and since I'm already in the mode of exhorting you to do stuff, write to me, email me, check your radio listings for the show's new weekly habitat, I figure, let me just get the rest of the bricks and mortar out of the way, so we can start putting the decorative touches on this episode. Mainly, I just want to remind you that 516-295-1511 is also the number to call if you're ready to advertise on Dave's Gone By or sponsor a segment here. With the arrival of spring, ad slots have been filling up recently. We have one new, very happy sponsor, and it looks like we already have another lined up for when we start the spring season 2 weeks from now. So don't be left behind. Call 516-295-1511 or email davesgoneby@aol.com and ask about our terrific rates, our added value, and test how we can raise the profile of your product, business, or service. Slowly but surely, Dave's Gone By is moving to the next level, and your support, monetary and otherwise, is crucial to helping it make that step. And why should you support Dave's Gone By with your advertising, your word of mouth, your continued loyalty and listenership, even after we move? Because where else would you find a program with the same mix of smart talk, silly talk, special talk, and music? I'll tell you where. Nowhere! Taking these disparate elements and linking them all together into one unified, entertaining radio show is my job. And I love it. And who am I? Well, I'm Dave. Dave Lefkowitz, radio personality, writer, humorist, and journalist. And this week's episode of my show is, like so many others, a composite of comedy, talk, and music, all of which I hope you'll enjoy. First of all, we'll have a segment called Dave Goes Off, where I go off on a topic and a rant in a Bill Maher-y, Colin Quinney kind of a fashion. Of course, it wouldn't be a true Dave's Gone By show without the News Gone By, our weekly roundup of events in the news with a sarcastic slant. Stories this week include such topics as Lederhosen, Abercrombie & Fitch t-shirts, bowling balls, polyps, Elvis Costello, Richard Simmons, a skating streaker, two neutral gorillas, one slow horse, a desperate DJ, hungry zombies, and horny potato men. Don't miss it. And capping the show, some really neat music, special music. Tonight, March 29th, is my 6th anniversary. Not on the station, but in real life. My wife, Joyce, and I were married 6 years ago, March 29th, 1998. I love her very much, and as an anniversary gift, I wanted to give her something meaningful, something personal. So I volunteered to put together a CD for her of songs she really loves by various artists. We talked about it, and we decided there were enough for two CDs, one of slow, mellow songs and the other of more up-tempo numbers, and she'd have them both handy, depending on her mood. Well, I finished the quieter CD this week, and I give Joyce credit. There's a bunch of nifty songs on it from people like Dido and Counting Crows, Natalie Merchant, Dawn Penn. So with the last 15 minutes or so of the program, whatever time is left, I'll share some of that music with you, too. So stick around the neighborhood from now till 8 o'clock and join us for this 71st edition of Days Gone By Across the Anniverse. It's our last Monday night. So let's make the most of it. Whatever lies ahead, it's been a great fall and winter season. Monday, Monday, you were so good to me.
Sometimes it just turns out that way. Oh, Monday morning, you gave me no warning of what was to be. Oh, Monday, Monday, how could you leave and not take me? Every other day, every other day, every other day of the week is fine. But whenever Monday comes, you can find me crying all of the time. Monday, Monday, so good to me. Monday morning, it was all I hoped it would be. But Monday morning, Monday morning. Trust that day. Ba-da, ba-da-da.
there. It just turns out that way. What money, money won't go away.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on AM 1240 WGBB Freeport and AM 1240 WGBB.com. Time for a segment called Dave Goes Off. Off on a topic, off on a rant, off on an issue in the news that disturbs or annoys or simply intrigues me. Now, I've been saving most of my political rants for other shows on the station. I've been a guest on engineer Joe Salzone's weekend program, Your World with Joe Salzone. And those tend to be very political, with Joe and every other guest representing the conservative right, and me brought in as the incorrigible lefty, even though my views are very middle to moderate. Anyway, I just wanted to use my time here for once to get political and weigh in on the whole Richard Clark 9/11 preparedness thing. This fallout continues from Clark's book, Against All Enemies. In it, the former counterterrorism official blasts the Bush administration for ignoring his warnings about al-Qaeda in the months leading up to 9/11. He said they basically shuffled him around and told him al-Qaeda was a high priority, but not as high as finding a reason to attack Iraq. In its defense, the White House points to other passages in Clark's book. They show that the Clinton administration was also slow on the uptake, and they missed three opportunities to kill bin Laden in the late 90s. It's a valid point, but not much of a defense. Basically says, hey, Bill Clinton was just as disengaged and incompetent as we are. Of course, he might have been distracted by that whole Monica Gate crap we cooked up to ruin his second term, and the fact that everything he voted for, us Republicans in the House and Senate, voted against, just to stymie his legacy. But I digress. Back to Richard Clark. Now, Republican Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist wants to declassify statements Clark made to a panel inquiry into September 11th. He wants to make the point that, contrary to the things Clark says about Bush in his book, at the hearings, Clark praised the president's actions. Now, it's extremely unusual for the White House to declassify testimony at congressional inquiries. After all, why should the public really know what its government is doing behind closed doors? And it's not as if we are the government or we elect these people or anything. And the beauty part is, simultaneously, while the Bush camp is trying to make the secret testimony of their opponent public, they're not even allowing Condoleezza Rice to go under oath and defend herself. She can go on 60 Minutes and any TV talk show that'll have her, but I guess if she actually has to swear to tell the whole truth, well, gee, that takes all the fun out of it, doesn't it? Funniest of all is that the week ended with President Bush goofing around at an annual dinner for the Radio and Television Correspondents Association. As is customary, Bush poked light fun at himself. Fine, all hail the good sport. But instead of a standard stand-up routine, he did a slideshow. He said, I'm ready for a tough election fight, and the slide showed him sitting at a desk wearing a boxing robe. He said he spends a lot of time on the phone listening to other world leaders. Cut to a picture of Bush with his finger in his ear. Cute, self-deprecating stuff. It's always nice to see from a powerful person. Then Bush showed a picture of himself in the Oval Office, looking out the window. And Bush said, those weapons of mass destruction have got to be somewhere. And later on, there were two more pictures of the president looking under his desk, scouring the office. No weapons there. And the audience laughed, because it was a pretty gutsy joke, all things considered. But then the newspapers and media started considering all those things. And the joke wasn't so funny. It's a joke that has cost nearly 600 American lives and turned a budget surplus into a multi-billion dollar deficit. And it's a little white lie that may have done some good, ousting an evil dictator and his depraved children from power. but it hasn't done a damn thing about anything else except give the vice president's former company a bunch of million-dollar contracts. The worst part is, if George Bush really wanted to find the biggest weapon of mass destruction, all he has to do is look in the mirror and point.
Better flag in the bassinet, oil and blood on the bayonet, crowded downtown, hit the floor. What are we fighting for? Smaller, but the bombs got bigger. Holocaust on a hairpin trigger. Ain't no games, so forget the score. What are we fighting for?
Saddam Hussein and his kids were really bad guys, and it's great that they're out of power, and who knows, maybe even Iraq will have democracy one day, or some kind of benevolent theocracy, or whatever it is. And I guess the right and the conservatives just don't understand that. They figure we're doing a good thing, and that's all, and whatever Bush told America was the reason didn't have to even be the full reason, because we were doing a good deed, and it's going to pay off big dividends in the years to come. I'm not so sure about that. And the Bush administration defends itself against the charges in Clark's book by saying, well, look, you know, Clinton kind of ignored the warnings and could have gotten bin Laden, but didn't, and, you know, why are we any worse than he is? But what I want to say is, now, wait a minute, you know, Clinton's administration was already 4 or 5 years ago, and certainly 4 years before the whole bin Laden thing. And then, whereas the Bush administration was in power for about 8 months, which means, wouldn't you think that there would be a bit more chatter and a bit more detailed plans being made by al-Qaeda to fly the planes into the Twin Towers a lot closer to the time that they happened than they would have been 3 or 4 years ago? Yes, maybe they were in training camps, maybe they were designing plans in some cafe in Turkey, but it's very clear that 2 or 3 or 4 months just before the planes going into the buildings, there would have been a lot more clues and red flags going up, and the chatter that the Bush administration and other countries across the world were warned of. So that's where this really comes in. And here's my analogy. It's basically like a kid who overdoses. Okay, now, 3 years earlier, people sort of knew that the kid, he's a teenager, he was doing light marijuana use. And the parents could sort of tell, and they were told, and like maybe a guidance counselor called him at one point and says, you know, he's starting to do some light drugs, steadily increasing. And the parents are concerned, but, you know, they're more concerned about the lack of a stop sign on a nearby street, because cars tend to come down it way too fast, and kids bike over there, and they play over there, and it is something of a problem. Now, Meanwhile, we go back to the kid, and instead of just doing light marijuana, now he has a full-blown drug problem. It's about 3 months before he dies. And he's doing cocaine and ecstasy and drinking heavily, and he's even been in a car accident. You know, he's been staying out all night doing all the things that kids in big trouble start doing. And a week before the overdose, the guidance counselor calls, and the kid's old friends call the parents, and they say, hey, look, your son is in really bad shape and heading for a fall. And the parents listen, and they try to intervene a little, but, you know, they're busy, and they've made some headway with a local official about the stop sign. And then, boom, the kid dies of an overdose. And the parents are in shock, they're in grief, they saw it coming, but they really didn't think it would happen. And then, right after the funeral, they make up their minds. Right then and there, come hell or high water, they're getting that stop sign. Welcome back to Days Gone By on AM 1240 WGBB Freeport and AM 1240 WGBB.com. We're in the middle of Dave Goes Off. Have another topic for you. Like a lot of my radio colleagues, I've been devoting a chunk of airtime recently to the Clear Channel Putsch. These are, of course, the guys who own a gazillion radio stations and have now taken it upon themselves to be the watchdogs of Audio America, curbing language and naughty content and firing DJs like Bubba the Love Sponge and Opie and Anthony for crossing the line, even though it's the exact same line they've done for decades. Of course, Clear Channel's been running scared of the FCC and its megalomaniacal chairman, Michael Powell. After the whole Janet Jackson Tittygate tussle, the FCC woke up and realized it was being perceived as lax by bored, repressed, Bible Belt housewives, so they started smacking all these radio stations with monetary fines. And last week, they got the House of Representatives and Congress to approve a fine increase. It's going to jump to nearly 20 times more than where it is now, from about 27 grand as a top to half a million per incident. Anyway, I have been over this stuff before and made my feelings abundantly clear about this shameful mess, but damn if I'm just going to let this fade into the upholstery. All broadcasters need to keep hammering away at the FCC and their 1984 tactics, because the hoopla over Janet Jackson's jugs will go away in a few more months. It really will. And so will concerns over the occasional F-word or naked game of Twister, but by then, the fines will be in place, the careers will be lost, the freedom of speech will be curtailed, and commercial radio will suck even more than it already does. And who knew that was possible? And I bring all this up because of an issue that's just a little less clear-cut. Last week, Clear Channel fired a local DJ on Power 105 FM. Rakia Mays was dismissed, not for dirty words, or sexual content, or getting people to shtup in a church. No. She simply did a riff about white versus black people. She said, quote, I'm a racist. I really am. I have a problem with white people. Not all white people, but a lot of white people. I can't tell if they are being real with me. And I hate when a black guy is walking down the street with a white girl. I hate both of them. Come on, there's a man shortage, et cetera, et cetera. Well, I don't know. The remarks are not appropriate. It is white bashing. It's not something I'd be thrilled to hear coming from the radio. And I guess if you want to follow the law, white bashing has to be treated with the same strictures as bigotry against blacks. But it just doesn't feel the same, you know? And maybe she was trying to be funny. It doesn't sound like a comedy routine, and it's not terribly amusing on the page. But then again, I'm only reading the transcript, so I can't comment on her delivery, which might have been very breezy and harmless. And even then, suppose the words themselves don't fall under the safety net of satire or spoof. I don't think she's being racist in the way a white person says, I hate black people, and, you know, that would be racism. She's voicing a rather unpleasant opinion, but not incendiary. And believe me, I'm not from the school of thought that says a double standard is impossible. You know, there are folks who say a black person by nature cannot be a racist just because of their basic sociological and historical position. Any black hatred directed at white people or Chinese people or Koreans is automatically diffused by the fact that blacks are still oppressed by whites, and that other cultures are given a better leg up in our society. But that is not a position I agree with. A poor person with anti-rich bias is still biased. A blind person who rails against people who can see may have a forgivable excuse, but bashing is bashing. So I have rather mixed feelings about the whole thing, though, as ever, I ultimately have to come down against censorship and throwing someone off the air just because they push the envelope. And believe me, this issue is especially troubling to me this week because of something at this radio station. A new program on the weekend schedule, The Holy Truth, it's on early Sunday mornings and then primetime Sunday evenings. Now, this show is a forum for those charming folks, the Black Israelites, or more specifically, the Holy Conception Unit Israelite Church of God and Jesus Christ Incorporated. If you think I am goofing about that name, check their website, theholyconceptionunit.org. And that whole Church of God and Jesus Christ Incorporated thing would be funny if it were just a scam to be some kind of tax-free religious institution, you know. But no, these butt wipes are for real and scary serious. You've seen these guys. They generally stand outside the Citibank on 7th Avenue, a block from Penn Station. They've got robes and little gold crowns and microphones, no turntables, and a big old poster of the 12 tribes of Israel, except not the standard 12 tribes, but their 12 tribes, because according to them, Jewish people aren't the actual Israelites. They are. And homosexuality is an abomination, and fornication keeps you out of heaven, and Satan runs the media. Gee, what code word is that for? And and even though they are the real Israelites, they believe in Jesus and the Second Coming. But it's bad enough, annoying enough. But what else can you really expect from another right-wing Christian extremist group, no matter what color they are? But if you've ever seen these guys actually preach, if you can call it that, all they're really talking about is black separatism and how white people are responsible for all the evil in the world. And basically, they shout at and insult any white person, especially women, unlucky enough to pass them by on the way to catch a train. And they've been doing it long enough to know exactly how far they can go, and how provocative they can be and still keep their permit, and how to shout down anyone who challenges them. Anyway, apparently these people have been given a forum on this radio station, and I'm a little disgusted by that. I'm not the only one. And I got into a whole discussion with engineer Joe Salzone on the pre-show last week about where the glop of hate speech starts to leak out of the First Amendment Tupperware. And I heard some of the Holy Truth last night, and, you know, I wanted to give it a listen, to be fair. And basically, the black Israelites spend the hour spitting half-truths and insults, and, in fairness, it's based on deeply held beliefs based on their interpretations of the Bible, to which they are extreme literalists. Not only are the Jews not the real Israelites, neither are the Arabs. The only people who belong in Israel, according to them, are American blacks. But again, it just feels weird to be semi-defending this Rakia maze of Power 105 for one kind of hate speech and condemning a similar kind on this station. So, to be continued is all I can say at this point, though I would love to hear your opinions on this. DavesGoneBy@AOL.com is the email address. DavesGoneBy@AOL.com. I am making an effort to give these guys the benefit of a doubt. And 95% of the time, these chowderheads are just doing the usual dogmatic Christian rants. Sounds like a cross between rapping, born-again preaching, and a lecture by Leonard Jeffries. But the other 5%, they really start spewing garbage. Oh, sure, I spew the occasional garbage now and then, but I try to spritz it with a little comedy so it doesn't stink up the joint. Besides, being Jewish, the closest I can get to hate speech is, what, $7.99 for an appetizer? That ain't nuts! Back after this. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on AM 1240 WGBB Freeport and AM 1240 WGBB.com on this Monday, March 29th, 2004. It's time for the news gone by, a look at events of the past week from a time-traveling perspective. On the Middle Eastern front, shortly after Israeli commandos killed the founder of Hamas, Sheikh Ahmed Yassin, Arab women by the dozens began naming their newborn babies after him, spent as a tribute to the slain terrorist, and I think the baby metaphor is fitting. After all, what better way to represent Yassin than with a selfish, babbling pest that can't walk, pisses all over itself, and can't be left unmonitored because everything it touches means danger. Speaking of people who murder Jews for a living, you know, I could live to 100 and I will never, under any circumstance, feel sorry for Germany. But I do have to shed a mild tear for German oompa and folk musicians this week. After years of slow economic growth, even relatively prosperous Bavaria is looking for ways to cut costs. So, what's the first thing to go? Bavarian Premier Edmund Stoiber said, quote, "We no longer want to sponsor Lederhosen with subsidies. €500,000 a year are generally allocated to traditional German garb. According to Reuters, a good pair of suede Lederhosen will set you back €149. So, folk groups are vowing to boycott this year's Oktoberfest unless this subsidy is reinstated. As for Premier Stoiber and his draconian measures, I don't know. If I were the opposition party, I would do some digging. There's no question that Stoiber himself is wearing a pair of government-issue, public-funded Lederhosen. Not only that, it's three sizes too small. It has to be. Why else would he be such a tight ass? From Germany, we move to Poland to protest the arrest of a journalist jailed for libeling a government official. His colleagues staged an attention-getting protest on the steps of Parliament. The writers and editors rented a tiger cage from the Warsaw Zoo and locked themselves inside. You could tell they were Polish journalists because they forgot to take the tigers out first. Funerals are being held next week. You know what's scarier than Republicans behaving like uptight conservative big brothers? Democrats who behave like Republicans. It's why the Democratic Party didn't want to touch Joe Lieberman for president, because, like a Republican, he ignored real social issues and focused on sex and violence in Hollywood movies. It's why nobody trusted Al Gore, because his wife, Tipper, thought Frank Zappa and Twisted Sister were more of a threat to American children than alcohol, drugs, and bad schools. So, add to that rogues gallery Bob Wise, Democratic governor of West Virginia. Seems like a nice guy. Very much a Democrat fighting the good fight. If you go to his website, the first thing he mentions are health care, using cigarette tariffs to support Medicaid, education scholarship programs, all the tried-and-true donkey stuff. So why would he do something as dumb as going after Abercrombie and Fitch for a clothing line? According to the Associated Press, Abercrombie's been selling a mocking T-shirt that reads, "It's all relative in West Virginia." It plays on, of course, the whole deliverance cliche of West Virginia being a place where 11-year-olds marry their cousins and all that. Governor Wise views that perception as perpetuating, quote, "unfounded negative stereotypes," unquote. Fair enough. And a state leader has to stand up for the honor and dignity of his territory. He has to make a show of defending West Virginia's honor against insults and slurs and anything that might impact tourism. Okay, we all understand that. And as governor, he should write an open letter to the manufacturers saying, "Hey, guys, this is in bad taste, and we really don't appreciate it, and it's not true." Now, granted, just by acknowledging the shirt's existence, Wise is bringing more publicity to Abercrombie & Fitch, which works against what he's trying to achieve. And hey, he's already done that by calling for the company to stop making the shirts, and he's done it in a much crankier way. If Bob Wise were really savvy, he'd even turn the joke in on himself, make it a linchpin of a travel and tourism promotion that disproves the old stereotypes of Appalachians. But Wise should have displayed more wisdom in the way he went about voicing his opposition to the T-shirts. As a Democrat, and as just a plain old American, Bob Wise should know better than to write, quote, "I write to you today to demand that you immediately remove this item from your stores and your print and online catalogs. In addition, these shirts must be destroyed at once to avoid any possibility of resale and proof be given thereof," unquote. Do you believe that? I write to you to demand that you immediately remove this high lover. Who the hell are you? Who died and made Bob Wise clothing czar? Stereotyped or not, these are not racist or offensive t-shirts. They don't yell fire in a crowded outhouse. They make a very mild joke on the same stuff that everything from the Beverly Hillbillies to David Spade and Adam Sandler movies have goofed on. Tom Lennox, a spokesman for Abercrombie & Fitch, told AP the t-shirts have sold well, but it's just one of their shirts for that one state. Another shirt slogan reads, New Hampshire, 40 million squirrels can't be wrong. Now, Lennox won't say whether the company will comply with Governor Wise's request. Sorry, demand. But I sure hope they don't. You've got the FCC blackmailing radio stations to take DJs off the air. You've got John Ashcroft ordering abortion doctors to release confidential patient information. And you've got this idiot demanding a company stop making funny t-shirts. I tried calling Bob Wise to ask him about this whole thing, and his wife answered the phone. She said she was fielding hundreds of phone calls, most of them completely in agreement with the governor, defending the moral character of West Virginia. She also said she totally stood by her husband's decision. After all, she said, what kind of sister would I be if I didn't? In crime news, 69-year-old Douglas Stiff of Brooklyn was arrested last week and charged with attempted murder. He tried to kill two police officers by dropping a bowling ball on their heads. It was an ingenious plan, actually. He dialed 911 and reported a robbery, and then waited 20 minutes for the cops to arrive and walk in front of his apartment building. Then he hurled the bowling ball down and, boom, missed his target by just 3 to 5 feet. Officers raced up the stairs and arrested this lunatic, asked if they're going to be particularly harsh with him, considering his murder weapon of choice. The arresting officer said, absolutely. We have to stop him before he strikes again. Why should he be spared? I'm just glad we caught him before he split. For his part, the defendant simply said, I was framed. Science news. Let's hear it for the American Cancer Society and their new spokes character, Polyp Man. He's no superhero. Actually, he's a bad guy. A gross-looking nerd in a bulbous red suit who runs away from doctors. That's because he's a polyp, a breeding ground for colon cancer. Of course, the message is that people should be screened and folks over 50 should get colonoscopies once a year. The Cancer Society has never been known for its raffish sense of humor, so Polyp Man is a departure for them, and I hope it's a big success. Whenever you can use humor to make a serious point, you're really ahead of the game. Still, there are limits. I don't care how cute they are, the vaginosis twins have to go, and don't even mention Captain Bloody Stool. Also on the science front, remember the old scam of guys who would stand on the street corner trying to sell people the Brooklyn Bridge? Well, Dennis Hope of Gardner, Nevada, has gone that one better with his company, Lunar Embassy. See. That's right. For $19.99 an acre, you can buy a piece of the moon. Sure, there's no way to get there, and the atmosphere isn't conducive to human life without a spacesuit. But assuming there is a commuter space travel in the years ahead, Dennis Hope is getting people in on the crater floor. According to the Associated Press, more than 2.5 million folks have bought these moon lots, which has allowed Mr. Hope to branch out and start selling timeshares on Mercury. No joke. And for some reason, none of this is legal. Sure, the United Nations says Hope has no claim on any of his territory to sell, but Hope bases his business on an official UN treaty that states quite clearly that the moon is, quote, the province of all mankind and not subject to national appropriation, unquote. Of course, some people who bought space property from Dennis Hope do it just for the novelty. One real estate mogul told AP, quote, you get more than $15 worth of conversation just from the deed on the wall. And if you throw money into a wishing well, how much of that do you get back? Unquote. So, will Dennis Hope's lunar embassy expand even further, especially now that we have probes on Mars? Hope says he would like to, although he's having some trouble popularizing his latest slogan, now's your chance to grab a chunk of Uranus. In legal news, Both prosecutors and defense attorneys agreed that 39-year-old Deanna Laney is mentally ill. She is the Texas mother who stoned two of her sons to death because, she says, God told her to. Police found 8-year-old Joshua and 6-year-old Luke lying in the backyard with their heads smashed in, the bloody stones the mother used just a few feet away. A third child of 14 months, bleeding in his crib but alive, also had a skull fracture. The only silver lining is it was an appropriate way for these children to die. After all three of them like hard rock, especially the headbanger kind. Yes! Yes! Oh my God, we have the rock and pneumonia and the comedy bell. Every week on this program, we make a play on words so much bolder than average it leaves listeners' faces stony with dismay. So it's gotta be the Days Gone By bad pun of the week. Now, when you do something long enough, it becomes a tradition. Even a bad tradition, and you gotta love and support it. And the best way to support it is, you got it, advertising. You can sponsor the Days Gone By Bad Pun of the Week or other segments on this program, or just write a standard 30 or 60 second advertisement. A lot of people are jumping on the bandwagon now that spring is here. I know the show will be changing times in a couple of weeks, so this is an ideal moment to jump in with the show. Link your brand identity with ours and help us take Days Gone By to the next level. Thousands of people listen to this station and to this very program, both on the radio and on the internet. Your job as a business person? Reach them. Tell them what you do and how well you do it. Doesn't matter if you own an eyeglass store or a cleaning business. Doesn't matter if you have a mortgage company or a theater company. Doesn't matter if your business is worth $1 million or if you hope someday it will gross $1 million. The key is to reach customers, to create buzz, to put your product, event, or service in the minds of people in a positive way. If you do that, the next time they need what you have, the person they will come to is you. So make your ad dollars count and put your message on Dave's Gone By. Call 516-295-1511 to find out how. 516-295-1511. The rates are still cheap. They've gone up a little bit because so has our listenership and our visibility, and so have our expenses doing the show. But it's still a drop in the bucket, I promise that. And every week, you're getting more ears for your money. So earmail davesgoneby@aol.com or call 516-295-1511 and ask for the rate card and how we can tailor an advertisement that fits your needs, your budget, your business. davesgoneby@aol.com. Be part of the show. Support the show. From the News Gone By to the World Weird Web, from the musical segues to the bad pun of the week. Don't be good. Be ponderful. Controversy on the education front, continuing the News Gone By. The president of Gwinnett College of Business in Georgia may have his accreditation revoked. Turns out he got his PhD from St. Regis University, which is an online school from Liberia. St. Regis counts life experience towards its degrees, so all this guy had to do was 10 months of coursework and a 60-page paper, and he was a doctor. The surprising part is Gwinnett College was well aware of St. Regis's policies, and the Professional Standards Commission judged them fair and reasonable. But so many teachers have been getting unaccredited degrees to beef up their resumes and salaries, the Georgia Board is rethinking its policy. Honestly, I don't know what took them so long. All they had to do was look at the paper on this guy's office wall. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think St. Regis is the only college whose diplomas come with a 5-year warranty and a free oil change. In entertainment news, Elvis Costello has a book deal, but he's not going to write a tell-all tome about his years in the music business or a memoir of his rather intricate love life. Nope. He's writing 2 books for Simon & Schuster. One will contain a bundle of comic essays. The second will be, quote, a series of intimate narrative chapters, taking their cue from the styles, themes, and characters found in a number of Costello's lyrics, unquote. Title of the book, Unreadable. In sports news, a zany moment at the World Skating Championship in Dortmund, Germany. Michelle Kwan was about to begin her routine when a streaker streaked by, 30-year-old Ron Bensimon of Montreal. He was on skates, stripped off his jacket to show he was wearing a tutu, and had the URL of an internet casino painted on his chest. It took 5 men and 40 seconds to apprehend him, basically because he was on skates and the cops weren't. Michelle Kwan said she tried not to be fazed by the incident. She ended up coming in third. And she told reporters, quote, "Something could have gone really, really, really wrong. I was skating around and I thought, big flower girl," she said. I guess that had to do with the tutu. Kwan also said, quote, "I knew right after he took his clothes off, it was a streaker," unquote. Which is one of the more obvious statements of the week. As for Ron Bensimon, he was charged with disorderly conduct and released. The police felt sorry for him, not because he looked like a fool on the ice, but because, well, if you think cold water causes shrinkage. Speaking of men flaming around in tutus, exercise guru Richard Simmons was cited for misdemeanor assault last week for an incident at Phoenix Airport. According to Reuters, the Delamille icon was waiting for a flight when a fellow passenger recognized him. The man made the offhand comment, quote, "Hey everybody, it's Richard Simmons. Let's drop our bags and rock to the 50s. Well, Richard did not take kindly to this belittling remark, so he strode up to the big mouth and said, quote, "You shouldn't make fun of people who have issues," unquote. And then he slapped the guy. Lucky for him, the dude turned the other cheek because the fellow who made the comment was 6'2" and weighed 250 pounds. In fact, he's a fighter in one of those ultimate cage death matches. Still, Simmons is not getting off scot-free. The victim says he'll probably press charges. Even if he's convicted, it's unlikely Simmons will go to jail. However, just in case he does, he has started carrying around an extra slippery bar of soap. No, but seriously, as a first-time offender, Simmons might be even put in a detention center or a youth facility, or as he likes to put it, sweating with the juvies. She's a loser, baby, but she won't be killed. Congratulations, sort of, to Haru Urara. That's the name of a horse in Japan. A horse that has passed something of a milestone. Last Monday, Haru lost her 106th straight race at Kochi Racecourse near Tokyo. She's kind of a reverse Seabiscuit. She comes from behind and stays behind. She finished 10th out of 11th in her last race, but she's become a stadium favorite. Prime Minister Junichiro Koizumi commented on the strange phenomenon, saying, quote, "It was a pity she lost, but I think it's good occasionally to have people cheer you on, regardless of whether you win or lose," unquote. Trainer Dai Muneishi admitted, quote, "I don't really know why she's so popular, but I guess the biggest reason is that the sight of her running with all her heart, despite having lost more than 100 times... gives comfort to people's hearts," unquote. And just in case you were thinking nice horses finish last because they finish last, Haru's popularity has ensured that she won't be destroyed or turned into Kobe Cutlets when her racing days are over. In fact, she'll go where all broken-down losers wind up, old-timers' day at Shea Stadium. Also in sports, gotta feel a little bit sorry for Australian swimmer Ian Thorpe. He was disqualified from the Olympics, the trials last weekend, not for steroids, not for poor sportsmanship, not for injury. No, the gold medalist and odds-on favorite to bring home the gold again accidentally fell into the water before the race. An honest mistake. You see it on blooper shows all the time. And I don't know if they disqualify runners who leap before the gunshot. I know in the NFL, football players who go offsides just get a 5-yard penalty. Australian Prime Minister John Howard called the disqualification, quote, a real tragedy for this country, showing, I guess, that the Prime Minister is a very lucky man, since he obviously doesn't know what a real tragedy is. To enlighten him, there's a cool joke I found that I'd like to share with you. I didn't write it, but I wish I did. President Bush is visiting an elementary school and goes to one of the classes. They're in the middle of discussing words and their meanings. The teacher asks the president if he would like to lead the class in defining the word tragedy. So the fearless leader asks the students for an example of a tragedy. One little boy stands up and says, if my best friend who lives next door is playing in the street and a car comes along and runs him over, that would be a tragedy. No, says President Bush, that would be an accident. A little girl then raises her hand. If a school bus carrying 50 children drove off a cliff, killing everybody on board, would that be a tragedy? I'm afraid not, explained the president. That's what we would call a great loss. The room goes silent. No other children volunteer. President Bush looks around the class and asks, isn't there anybody who can give me an example of a tragedy? Finally, all the way in the back, a small boy raises his hand. In a quiet voice, he says, if Air Force One, carrying you and Mrs. Bush, was struck by a missile and blown up to smithereens by a terrorist, that would be a tragedy. Brilliant, says the president. That's exactly right. And can you tell the class why that would be a tragedy? The boy says, it has to be a tragedy because it wouldn't be an accident and it certainly wouldn't be a great loss. I think you can see why the station wants to move me till later in the evening. Here's one from the New York Post's Weird But True column. A London experimental theater group is holding a casting call for an actor to play a corpse in its next production. No biggie, except they want the actor to be a real corpse, so they're auditioning terminally ill people and AIDS victims, hoping they'll be willing to lie in state during the performances. The show is called Dead You Will Be, and examines issues and attitudes towards death, hence the call for a real live dead body, or a real dead body, to be on stage and part of the show. The theater company's artistic directors make it clear that they will treat the body with respect. And yes, they have checked with authorities, and as long as you don't dissect or abuse the cadaver, there's no law against displaying it. Shock value aside, I guess these artistic directors are simply showing the flip side of a very classical form of theater. After all, instead of death of a salesman, they're salesmen of a death. Speaking of the Grim Reaper, opening in movie theaters last week was a new version of the George Romero horror classic, Dawn of the Dead. Sarah Polley and Jake Weber star in the remake, which again tells of zombies rising from their graves to kill and eat the living and take over the world. We actually have a short clip from the movie that I can play for you if we can just load that up. Okay, here's what it sounds like. Brains! Brains! Give me brains! Oh dear, sorry, that was the wrong clip. That, of course, was George Bush in prayer. Also in movie news, not that it's any consolation to Howard Stern or Rush Limbaugh or Bubba the Love Sponge, not to mention the fine folks at the National Endowment for the Arts, but America isn't the only place debating the content of its media. Under scrutiny across the water are the distribution policies of the United Kingdom Film Council. It's a publicly funded entity financed by a national lottery. The idea is to promote and encourage the British film industry, which is now nearly a half century past its glory years. As with any grant system, the applicants and results are a mixed bag. The lottery pumped $3 million into Robert Altman's Oscar-nominated Gosford Park, and also helped finance a low-budget film based on a Jacobean tragedy by Thomas Middleton. All well and good. But this year, the lottery also financed an 83-minute comedy called Sex Lives of the Potato Men. One critic called it a masterclass in nauseous ineptitude. Another dubbed it, quote, a sump of untreated dung, unquote. Yes, but did he like it? No, but seriously, not only have some reviewers called it the worst British movie ever made, Of course, some politicians are now up in arms over it, ranting about abuse of public funding, and how can they call this art, and all that. And it's the same nonsense we went through with Jesse Helms versus the NEA, and Karen Finley, and Robert Mapplethorpe, and Serrano's Piss Christ. And to continue the dung theme, that Virgin Mary done up in pinks and elephant crap that Rudy Giuliani got his comb over in a twist about. The difference here is that Andy Humphreys, the director of Sex Lives of the Potato Man, has no pretensions to art. It's just a bawdy sex farce, which has a long tradition over there, about a group of immature men who deliver potatoes to fish and chip shops in the Midlands. Humphreys told the UK Guardian that the audience for his film is not, quote, middle-aged, middle-class film critics, but ordinary people. When you make a film full of references to masturbation, oral sex, and porn, he said, you already know you're not going to be competing with Lost in Translation and Cold Mountain for Oscar nominations. The fun part of all this is that Humphreys said his theme was, quote, the stupidity of man, and that the movie was based on his own experiences. All well and good, except, according to various reports, Sex Lives of the Potato Man, I keep saying that title because I love it, Sex Lives of the Potato Man features scenes of masturbation, utilizing strawberry jam and fish paste, close-ups of piles of freshly deposited dog feces in the park, there's that dung reference again, and a sex scene between the lead character and, quote, a terrifying, zeppelin-bosomed older woman. There's also a scene in which one of the potato men picks his nose and admires it in loving detail. Now, I know what you're all saying. Where can I see this film? Unfortunately, it's not released in America yet, though it's already grossed $1.5 million across the pond. And cool as it sounds, the reviews on the Internet Movie Database do confirm the sense that the movie is, as one scribe wrote, awful, unfunny, and a waste of all the talent involved. And that was from 60-second preview. No, but another writer added, quote, this film made me ashamed to be British. And the best another writer can say about it is that the British film industry has survived worse. Oh, well, I'd like to see it anyway. Especially since another amateur critic mentioned that the film might find an audience in America, since this country gave the world Freddy Got Fingered, which I know is supposed to be a put-down, but I had some laughs from that Tom Green movie, the likes of which had me doubled over and crying. So come on, England, just this once, spare us another Merchant Ivory costume drama, and send us Sex Lives of the Potato Man. Even if it was fried by the critics for being half-baked, what were they expecting? MASH. Oh, and another movie story. Well, it's official. Mel Gibson is now a serial killer. At least if you go by the same logic that has rock acts like Marilyn Manson and Judas Priest being responsible for teenage suicides, then you have to hold Gibson responsible for the deaths and mayhem being caused by his movie, The Passion of the Christ. When the film first opened, a woman from Chicago had a heart attack at the theater. Another woman from Kansas collapsed and died a few days ago. And as we mentioned last week, a guy tried to nail himself to a crucifix after seeing God come out of his computer. When will this dangerous and sick movie be stopped? And why doesn't Mel Gibson use his filmmaking powers for good? Like making a movie about, oh, I don't know, nubile 18-year-old girls who want their first sexual experience to be with a bearded Long Island disc jockey. Now, there's a passion I'd want to see. Hey, speaking of lonely disc jockeys, how about that Romanian DJ who got tired of waiting for his bosses to pay him, so he locked the doors, went on the air, and threatened to jump off the balcony if the station cut his signal. Alin Farkas of Bucharest's Mix FM was on the air 4 hours before he let police take him into custody. Afterwards, the station owners said they would make their best efforts to pay his back salary of roughly $400. Happily, there's little chance of a similar occurrence at this radio station, WGBB, mainly because you know how many hours the engineers would have to work here to make $400. Finally, in the news gone by, Demba and Chaka, the Ben and J-Lo of the gorilla world, have called it quits. The two apes were introduced 5 years ago at the Philadelphia Zoo in the hopes that they would date, mate, and create a primate. Zookeepers had high hopes because Chaka was waltzed up best stud muffin after siring 8 gorilla babies at another zoo. But this time, it just wasn't meant to be. Chaka and Demba will be separated, which means no more picking lice off each other's heads, no more shrieking, no more nose picking, no more throwing feces at each other. But hey, they were getting tired of foreplay anyway. And that's the news gone by for March 29th, 2004. Please send your comments, opinions, and used lederhosen to News Gone By, P.O. Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062. Days Gone By, Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062. Or email us at davesgoneby@aol.com. And if you want to hear older versions of the News Gone By, remember that they are now available on CD. Find out more by visiting the website hometown.aol.com/davesgoneby. That is also the place to find out where and when we will be on to start the spring season in April. hometown.aol.com/davesgoneby. If you missed the opening of the show, I'll just remind everyone again, Dave's Gone By is moving from Monday nights to another time, another day. That's being worked out this week. We're taking a hiatus next week because of Passover, but the week after that, we will be back. Possibly prime time, maybe a bit later, and a weekend slot isn't out of the question either. It's all in flux at the moment, but we're definitely coming back in 2 weeks. Just a question of finding the best suitable time slot. So, to be kept posted, check our website, hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By. Or write to us, davesgoneby@aol.com. Let us know what might be better or worse times for you to hear the show, which helps us make a more informed decision on making the right move. As always, we reserve the right to read any comments you make on the air, name withheld upon request. So send best wishes, send suggestions, but please, no potato men, unless you have something to write home about. Back after this.
Oh my god, the wedding is next month. We need flyers, invitations, booklets. I think we are screwed.
No, we're not, Pearl. We'll just go to Hewlett Minuteman Press.
Hewlett Minuteman? What can they do?
Printing, engraving.
Really?
Letterhead, souvenirs.
Wonderful! Are they still at 1315 Broadway in Hewlett?
Yep. 516-295-5577.
Well, stop dawdling! Let's go!
Yes, dear. Day after the wedding, I kill her.
I won't put my hands up and surrender. I'm in love and always will be.
A couple of songs from a CD that I compiled for my wife on the occasion of our 6th anniversary, which is today. Mazel tov to both of us, March 29th, 2004. My beloved Joycey, whom I love and cherish and respect and honor and all those terrific things, because she deserves all of that and more. So, as I said earlier in the program, I wanted to give her a special personal present, so I put together a CD of songs that she really likes and listens to a lot. Among them, the Cranberries' Will You Remember? That's from the To the Faithful Departed album, very underrated piece. And also Dido from her second album, Life for Rent, with White Flag. And I'm not surrendering a white flag about this radio show, which is going to come back in 2 weeks, as I've been saying all along. And just, you have to bear with us, because next week we're on vacation because of Passover, and then the week after we won't be on Mondays anymore, but we are moving. Before I give you the last details on that, I do have to do some thank yous, including to some other folks on the radio station whom I think are staying put in their time slots. You might have to check on them, including Bonnie D. Graham and her show, Long Island Skating, which you can hear Friday nights at 6, and Comic Book Novice, Thursday nights at 9. And plus, of course, engineer Joe Salzone with his shows, Sunday nights at 7 and 11 for Your World with Joe Salzone, two different episodes of that. And also, you can hear him Mondays at 6 and Mondays at 11. Gotta thank our sponsors, too. All important sponsors like the Tondor Grill on Sunrise Highway in Rockville Center. Go to tondorgrill.com and check out their menu, because it is Indialicious. And Hewlett Minuteman Press for some non-Indialicious printing and copying and engraving, all kinds of, well, they'll do all your needs on all that stuff. 1315 Broadway, 516-295-5577 is the number for Hewlett Minuteman Press. And thank you also, of course, to TotalTheater.com and the Theater Guide Performing Arts Insider. You can find out more about subscribing by going to TotalTheater.com. And that does it for this 71st episode of Dave's Gone By. As I said, our last on Monday nights. A reminder again, no show next week. We're back in 2 weeks. Different day, different time. So look for us. And until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz. Good night, goodbye Mondays, and gone by.